Hej, Patrik här. Med en liten arkivspecial har jag valt att kalla det ni ska få höra alldeles strax. Det är nämligen så att för 6 år sedan så släpptes Father John Mistys album Pure Comedy. Och i samband med det så fick jag chansen att byta några ord med honom över telefon. Och det är faktiskt på dagen 6 år sedan det hände när det här läggs ut. Vilket jag upptäckte när jag rotade igenom några gamla filer i jakt på någonting helt annat nyligen. Och snubblade över den här intervjun. Och när jag lyssnade igen så var det ett parti som jag tyckte var kul att lyssna på. Och det är när vi pratar om hans låt Leaving LA. En 13 minuters mastodont med stråkarrangemang signerat kompositören Gavin Bryars. Som jag tycker är rätt ball. Så det ni kommer få höra är alltså när jag pratar med Josh Tillman över en raspig lina. Jag sitter i Stockholm. Han är på en gräsmatta någonstans i USA. Men han blev på ganska gott humör när jag sa att jag ville gå djupare in i musiken. Det känns som att han bjöd till. Ja, ni får avgöra själva. Det kommer ganska snart fler, inom citat, riktiga avsnitt av den flygande jukeboxen. Det ser jag verkligen fram emot att dela med mig av. Jag har träffat några toppenmänniskor, verkligen. Men vi hörs mer om det om ett tag. Ha det bra så länge. Hej då. I was living on the hill by the water tower and hiking trails. My favorite tune on the album is Leaving LA. When you wrote it, did you kind of have the notion that this is it? This is the one. I'm going to write a like an epic tune here, or how did it come to be?
Well, I mean, there was about a year where I just had that first line. And I just kind of kept singing that over and over again, and I really liked it, but I didn't have any real sense of what the song was supposed to be. I certainly didn't think it was going to be what it ended up being. But the real key to understanding that song is the way it ends. You know, it ends in mid-sentence, and the tune is about this kind of unspeakable thing, which was that this uncertainty had kind of crept into Emma and I's relationship for the first time. And we had just gotten married, we were moving to New Orleans, we had made all these big decisions, and I think we were both feeling a little anxious about that. And it was this thing that we couldn't really admit to each other that, you know, for the first time we were having doubts about whether or not it was all going to work. And so that song is kind of, it's more or less me dancing around that thing, you know, and talking about everything under the sun imaginable, like just to avoid having to address that thing that was that we both knew that we couldn't talk about. And, you know, really realizing that song is more or less a realization of like, look, if I don't have this person in my life, if I don't have this love in my life, then my life is nothing more than this kind of like careerism and anxiety about success and anxiety about my ability as a songwriter and my role in the culture and all that stuff. It really doesn't add up to a whole lot. It doesn't make for a very satisfying life, if that's it. And so the song needed to be that as long as it is, you know, because it needed to feel like being in my head for like 15 minutes.
It really lingers. For me, when I start spinning the album, it's one of the songs that I'm looking forward to hearing again. And just the melody is so beautiful. So, I mean, in that sense, it really lingers for me. And I realize, you wrote the song. You have your own personal connection to it, of course, as you're explaining to me now. But what I'm trying to say is it's really nice to be in that space as an outsider as well for such a long time.
I prefer music that I can get lost in. It's apples and oranges. There's something great about a 3 minute, something great about I want to hold your hand or something. But then, you know, there is also room for that. You know, I mean, 13 minutes is really not that long. You know, I mean, it's just long enough to really get lost in something. And that's what I wanted to communicate. And, you know, just from like a compositional standpoint, in the back half of each verse, when it goes to that relative D minor, that you just never get sick of hearing that change.
No.
It's such a satisfying change.
Can we talk about the string arrangement for a bit?
Yeah.
Yeah, I read in the credits that you enlisted Gavin Bryars, and that was a name that popped out to me because, and I'm not encyclopedic in my knowledge, but has he worked with people in like pop or contemporary folk rock a lot before?
No, he's never. I mean, Gavin is.
I'm sorry, I knew him from the sinking of the Titanic and Jesus Blood failed me yet.
Right. No, he's never done anything like this before. It's his first time on any kind of pop album. And it was really like either he was gonna do the string arrangement or there was not gonna be a string arrangement on the song.
Why?
You know what I mean? But, because I cannot think of anyone else who could have like done such a masterful job of like interpreting. The string arrangement does such an incredible job of re-articulating the lyric, you know, and he really got a sense of the, you know, because they're right around after that first chorus. The listener is sort of supposed to start to feel a little anxious, you know, like this is sort of like, is this thing ever going to end? and the lyrics kind of start to collapse on themselves. They start to get more and more intensely self-reflexive. And the way that he picked up on that, well, I just knew that he could make a piece of music that was, that have the right pacing, you know, where
so,
there's rapid. Can you hear me?
Yeah. I was trying to interrupt you and I mistimed my cue. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's fine.
And what I wanted to ask you was, so you reached out to him or how did he come on board?
I got his email from like a friend of a friend of a friend. And I just sent him the song, and he wrote me back and said that he loved the song and wanted to do it. And then on top of that, he came to L.A. and conducted the orchestra. You know, it's just mind-blowing.
Yeah, I can imagine. You were mentioning the way he articulates the song with the strings. There's, I forget which part of the, which verse it is, but I think it's about 6 minutes and 30 seconds in where the strings almost become dissonant. In relation to the
right.
melody of, yeah, that's just the fact that you actually get away with that in a sense. You know what I mean?
Right.
For me, it's mind blowing. I love that part.
Right.
What was your relationship? Sorry.
Where it goes, na, 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 na.
Yes.
Yeah, incredible.
I just wanted to say that this is the fan speaking. What was your what was your entry point into his world previously?
The first thing I heard of his was Sinking of the Titanic, which a friend of mine who played a lot of the synths and some of the keys on the album, his name is Keithus. He, he told me about him, and then I just kept digging deeper and deeper into his work, and there's something, it's kind of one of those, you know, at a certain age, you don't expect to really be, to fall in love with music like a teenager ever again, and Gavin's music gave me that same, when I heard Gavin's music, it was basically the same thing as hearing Nirvana, you know, as a 15-year-old.
Mind-blowing.
You know, it gave me that same, like, explosive kind of moment.
Yeah. Did he just fly in for the string arrangements and the conducting parts, or did you actually get to, I don't know, hang out with him?
Well, he was in the studio with us for about 3 days. I mean, I just couldn't believe how comfortable he was. And really what was amazing was, I mean, he's 80 years old, you know?
Yeah.
And he's doing something that he had never done before. And you could tell how fascinated he was, like, watching our process and, like, the way that these kind of records go down. And he was just, he ended up playing some other things on certain parts. And he just really, it was something I'll never forget, you know, getting to work with him and just how inspired I was by the fact that someone his age and at his level of prestige was so open to, like, sitting around with these long-haired idiots, you know?
Yeah, it's amazing.